Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard with you live downtown Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino is your spot. 3-hour banger lined up today. Great guests on the program, including Adam Chernoff coming up in an hour. His thoughts on all four games, coaching changes, openings. We're going to talk to Benjamin Albright, who has covered the Broncos for a long time in Denver, get his thoughts on that game. Ryan Kramer, some long shot bets that he likes for the divisional round. And we will go hot and heavy with the NFL, obviously, throughout the next 3 hours. And Pauly, the weather could play a factor this week. For days now, we've been kicking around the idea of, are we going to get Antarctica showing up? Arctic-type conditions in Chicago? Well, the answer to that is it's supposed to be really, really cold, potentially windy, obviously. Did you see those videos coming off of Lake Michigan?
Yeah. Okay. They've been good, yeah.
Now, I will point this out, and I highly suggest that you become a VSiN Pro subscriber, vsin.com/subscribe. The daily email is great. All the links to the emails, well worth your time reading. This was from Bill 80 in the email earlier this week. Cleve T.A., who is very good on the National Football League, was on with Gil earlier this week, and he had the chart of games listed when it's like this cold, coldest game since 2000. The over is 10-6-1, average of 5.4 points per game going over. With winds of 12 miles an hour or more, the under was 4-2-1.
This is a big total, though, and it's come down.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we'll see if it wreaks havoc in the first game as well. It'd be fantastic to get two or three weather games here.
Oh, sign me up.
We haven't had many weather games, which has been unfortunate. But it goes back to Stafford being 1-9 in the rain and snow going back, and probably the coldest game he's ever played in. And his numbers have been poor. But also the luck factors we've talked about all year is the Bears number one in takeaways and interceptions and turnover differential, if that will continue. So it feels like maybe he'll throw a pick. And he says he's good to go, but maybe the hand and pinky gives him some problems too. The finger, rather.
Yeah. And the speculation then, the other game on Sunday, New England hosting Houston. There's going to be a rain and snow mix on Saturday. Snowy, slushy travel, on some of the interstates up there. But they still don't know, how inland it's going to go at this point. And I guess we could, but it's too much of a coin flip at this point. But like you said, come on, let's have some weather games in January in the playoffs, and I'll have a good time watching it unfold that way. And by the way, the South Point did go to 3.5 earlier today on the Patriots. I can't imagine that they don't use juice over at South Point. But I think probably every time it goes to 3.5, there's going to be buyback. And then right now they're still resisting that urge, I think, here at Circa, minus 20 cents on the 3 with the Patriots. Okay, so let's get going with the games on Saturday. And the Broncos are now 1.5-point favorites in this game here at Circa. And we've talked about this game a lot so far throughout the year. The biggest storyline, I think, right, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but we're on opposite sides. The reason why you like Denver is because of the bye, obviously, trusting Peyton, but more importantly, all the injuries now to the Bills,
And they can't stop the run. Yep, horrible run defense. So this is surprising. Teams are only 43% ATS off the bye since 2003. As we mentioned yesterday, the one seed in the NFC hasn't won it since 2017. But Peyton off the bye, 4-0 straight up, and the average margin 14 points per game. I agree with Sal Pal. He's using this as fuel, the fact that they open the dog in some spots and not a lot of respect for Denver. But it's their first home playoff game in 10 years. They've won 13 of their last 14 at home, and they're also number two against the run. You get Greenlaw back, so I think they'll contain Cook. They play man coverage and contain Shakir and slow down Superman. And I think they can get what they want on the ground. And unlike Cohen, Peyton won't get away from the run. And a team that everyone likes to bash, and rightfully so, is just the worst one seed we've ever seen. -3 in the turnover differential. Had some horrible performances from Knicks and company. But I think they'll emerge out here with a 7-point win and host the AFC title game against the Patriots.
So then you would be willing to tease the game? Up to 7.5 with the Bills. Allen keeping it close. Doesn't get beat by more than one score, basically.
Yeah, probably. A little risky, though. Yeah, maybe there's a late field goal. Some of that business. If you trust Prater in this spot, too. I trust Lutz more than Prater, even though we hit the 50-yard field goal last week.
Mm-hmm.
But, this is tough with the injuries, too. I mean, we can't stress this enough on how many guys are hurt. And then your idea of do you put Surtain on one of the tight ends, and then I can lock down Shakir, make Cooks beat me, or make Coleman beat me, or one of those guys, if that happens. But
so
I think it starts with the number two run defense and containing Cook, and Jacksonville did a pretty good job last week, too.
Warren Sharp comes on several shows throughout the week here on VSiN, our show on Monday, also our Sunday morning tailgate show. We'll talk to him twice, as we have every Sunday throughout the entire season. A couple of tweets from him on this game last night. The Broncos have the number two highest blitz rate in the NFL. And to your point about playing man and how this could tie into Josh Allen maybe taking off. But, as he points out, they must stop blitzing Josh Allen if they want to win. In 2024 and 2023, Josh Allen against Denver, when he was blitzed, plus 0.43 EPA per dropback, 84% completions. No blitz, negative 0.1 EPA per dropback, 58% completions. In two games against the Bills, Joseph's defense has done a great job in the first half. In the wild card round last year, Buffalo led 10-7 at halftime. 2023, week 10, Denver led 15-8 at halftime. It was Bo Nix and Russell Wilson, both in Buffalo, but he spiked the blitz rate up in the second half, and the Bills outscored Denver by a 35-9 combined score. So he absolutely killed them when they decided to blitz. The good news is they also have one of the best pressure rates when they don't blitz. So this to me, though, either way, blitz or no blitz, playing man coverage like this, isn't Josh Allen going to take off a ton?
I don't know about that. That's what I was going to ask you. I don't know. He's hurt. Maybe he doesn't.
Yeah, but I like the comment coming out of the from one of his teammates this past weekend when he said, outside of that locker room, nobody in the world is ever going to know how hurt he is. And nobody knows the pain that he has to take every single week. He sucks it up, and he doesn't show it.
Well, I think he's hurt, but I'd rather have May over 36 rushing yards than Josh Allen.
Oh.
Now, I think you'll see plenty of the tush-push, which can happen here.
Ooh.
And other people are bringing up last year, but that was the different team. You know, Cooks had a lot of success on him the last couple games, and they ran him out in the playoffs 31-7. I don't think that's going to happen here, and they've completely changed things defensively. And there's some fun props, too. It goes back to, like, how does this stuff not cash when you think about it? Cook to have 5 yards each quarter is $1.30. To have 10 yards each quarter is plus 220. To have 25 yards rushing each half is $1.30. If you think Allen takes off and runs, 25 yards rushing each half is plus 550. And Shakir, a catch each quarter is 2-1. 5 yards each quarter is plus 425 after he had 12 receptions last week. Come on.
Big. Can he get it done? This is Josh Allen talking about how the team has been dealing with all of the injuries to the wide receiver room.
Obviously, not an ideal situation, but I still trust that room completely. You know, whoever we bring up needs to step up, and, you know, we have full confidence that they will. This week is going to be very important throughout the practices that we have of making sure that we're getting on the same page with timing and just understanding where guys can go, try to utilize their strengths to the best of our abilities. But I got no doubt that whoever's going to be up in those spots is going to do their job, step up, and then help us win or help us make plays.
That to me, somebody is going to cash for the Bills. Like, I know the Broncos defense is really, really good.
Yeah.
I don't think the Bills are going to go touchdownless in this game. And there's an angle where it could be an absolute bomber. It could be a third-string tight end. It could be Curtis Samuel.
Could be.
At that 10-1 price for any time.
Not bad. But a lot of these guys are very low, though. And I still like Shakir over, and I bet Cook's over. Cook's down to 28.5. But there could be a bomber, and there could be a guy you can ladder, and it could be Kirk part two, what he did.
Well, could it be this guy?
Yeah.
Here's John Hansen, the fantasy guru, making the case for one of the Bills receivers in this game.
Keon Coleman over 20.5 yards. I did not like Keon Coleman coming out. I said he stinks, basically. And he has stunk in 2 years. I mean, when I say stink, I don't mean he can't do anything. I mean, he's just not that good because he doesn't beat zone coverage, basically. But the Bills are very thin at wide receiver. They're so desperate, they may actually elevate Mecole Hardman from the practice squad. But if there is a sleeper in this game at receiver, it's clearly Keon Coleman. He only had one target last week, but he caught it for 36 yards. would have beat this prop on that one target. He will see a lot of Riley Moss, who is rock solid, but he is also one of the most targeted corners in the league at 18%. Why? Because he plays opposite Pat Surtain, who is the man.
Okay, so
a lot of PI calls.
Yeah, he was also very high on Kirk in that game on Monday night.
Yeah, I loved him.
And look at this. I'm looking at the ladder props right now for Keon Coleman. 30-plus is plus 154. 50-plus is plus 410. 70-plus is almost 9-1. If you want 100-plus on Keon Coleman, is 25-1. Because his number is so low, I mean, he hits a couple of decent, like, 25-yarder here, 18-yarder here. I mean, you're starting to cook with this ladder prop already. And I, like, that's what you got to look at here to find out some of these guys that, hey, look, one catch might get him overall on the yardage prop for the game. And then if he has a couple more, three, four, five catches, he's going to go bombs away.
That's why I'd rather have Cooks than Coleman, because Cooks has 7 for 159 going back, with Coleman only having one catch and then being a healthy scratch a couple games. I still think both guys can go over, but I think if one guy explodes, it's Cooks.
How high would you want to go on? I have the numbers right in front of me.
80?
Plus 880.
Yeah.
100 on him is 17-1.
What if they fall behind two scores and they're throwing?
Yeah, yeah.
Anything's possible.
Shortest touchdown in the game, under 1.5, is minus 140. Like, we're going to get a tush push at the one-yard line, are we not?
Short yardage. I don't know. Yeah. That, maybe you get a PI call, too. You'll be rooting for that.
All right, more of the divisional round coming up next. The closer we get to kickoff, the more and more I like this player. Find out who it is here on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Always follow the money.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. Thanks for watching on YouTube TV, listening on Sirius XM channel 158, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, or any of our outstanding affiliates across the country. Right now, we head out to the Progressive Guest Line. Joining us from parts unknown, the great Adam Chernoff, longtime friend of the show. You can follow him on X at Adam Chernoff. Good afternoon, pal. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So the parts unknown last week caught me off guard, but I went and looked it up. Did you guys know 23 different wrestlers in the history of WWF and WWE have been billed from parts unknown?
Get out of here.
If we keep this up, I'll get some ropes like the Warrior to shake pre-segment here.
Well, I love it. Great job out of you. 23. I would have guessed
surprising.
Like, I would have guessed 6-8 maybe.
Yeah. I'm missing link comes to mind.
You would think it's a gimmick, right? But yeah. It seemed like it was much more common than I ever thought that it was.
My wife and I are planning a vacation to parts unknown after the Super Bowl. Should be a lot of fun. Okay, so let's begin with the games that we have on Saturday, the early game. And Buffalo opened up at most books anyway, a small favorite, 1 or 1.5. It has since flipped pretty much everywhere. Denver sitting here as a 1.5-point favorite. Total is right now 45.5 or 46.5. What do you make of this game, Adam?
I'm a little bit stuck and I'm a little bit conflicted here because I am sitting on a Bills-Rams Super Bowl exacta from late April that I paid around 60-1. And so I have a pretty strong financial interest in the Bills continuing to progress. But I got to tell you guys, this looks like it's just a brutal matchup for the Bills across the board here. Mm. The wide receiver injuries that they have to deal with going into Denver, where the bye, I still think this bye is being underpriced even in 2026 now that we are. It just seems like it's always a little bit short. And just the matchup against this Broncos defense, which is so good against the run. They're good against everything. But it seems like unless this is a Josh Allen hero game, which is certainly in the cards, this Broncos defense is going to have their way with this Bills offense. And on the other side, this Broncos offensive line is so good. And unlike the Jags, who we talked about last week, where I like the Bills, was saying that you want to attack the Bills on the ground behind the strong offensive line. It's been their weakness for years. And that's, I think, exactly what the Broncos can do. And so it lightens the burden here on Bo Nix a little bit in this playoff start for him. So again, very conflicted, as I've got that big payout on Buffalo that's pending in the back pocket that I'm sitting on, but certainly looks just super favorable here for Denver across the board.
All right. Most people are making the case that it could be, based on what you're saying, a rather large day for rookie running back R.J. Harvey on the ground and also like in the passing attack as well. Do you see it the same way? Do you see maybe a little bit of Jaleel McLaughlin? Like, have you looked at prop numbers? Who else could be involved here?
Yeah, it's always a bit of a mystery with Sean Payton and how he handles the running backs and who gets the couple extra features and when you get the big breakout runs. But you think about the Bills and just defensively what they've been conceding all season. They're allowed 6.5 yards per carry to Jacksonville last week, which was a team that had a lot of inconsistency running the ball. It was 31st on the season in terms of EPA per rush conceded. Denver's offensive line, if you want another really telling stat just for how dominant it is, right at the top of the league for yards blocked before first contact. And so whether you're looking at Jaleel McLaughlin, whether you're looking at R.J. Harvey, however you're wanting to attack this, lots of favorable matchups here across the board for this Broncos run game behind this run, this offensive line. It's just, it's the big weakness that has killed Buffalo for years that is going to be on display again that Denver can exploit.
All right. This has never happened before, the late game. They met in week one. They met in the last game, and now they meet in the playoffs. Both games were low scoring, 17-13 and 13-3. Horrible spot for the 49ers. Injured, short week, travel yet again. What do you think here? Seattle laying 7 and a total of 45, even though we had two low scoring games.
Yeah, there's even a couple 44.5 showing up. This is an over for me for the full game. The last game in the regular season opened around 50.5 and was really a true reflection of just how many issues this 49ers defense has. And there was some major pro money on that under. And that thing ended up closing 47.5 shaded to the under. It was a 3-point move in a big game in a standalone spot. And now we're getting the rematch, as you said, just a couple weeks later. And this has been adjusted down to, we'll call it 45 here as it's showing on the screen. But it's a 49ers defense that cannot generate pressure. Last week against Philadelphia, they sat in cover two, hoped and prayed. It was kind of a very surprise, but somewhat typical Salah game plan. It's kind of what he's done throughout his career. Sat in cover two, and the Eagles, despite having answers to beat it, elected to go a different direction and struggled. And so I don't think last week what we saw, as maybe as exciting as it was to see how bought in everyone was on the sideline, it's not a reflection that this Niners defense is fixed. And so Seattle, they can beat them on the ground. They can beat them out wide. The Seahawks are going to move the ball. And then you have Purdy and the 49ers just in chase mode, really, I think, all game. I don't see this as a game where they're going to get an early score, lean on McCaffrey running it, lean on the run game, because Seattle's so good at stopping the run with lighter personnel on the field. San Francisco's going to have to throw it. And after a bit of a curveball thrown their way two different times this season, is McDonald going to come up with something off the bye? Certainly possible, not putting it past him, but this to me is a game where the 49ers go down swinging, having some success throwing the football. Weather is very reasonable for a January game in Seattle too. So this one is going over the total of 45, in my opinion.
It sounds like we're on the same page here. I brought up the point earlier that it feels correlated on both sides. Running backs over, like attempts, yards, maybe combined there, team rushing totals for Seattle, Darnold under stuff, getting a lead. They rely on Charbonnet and Walker. On the flip side, McCaffrey under in the rushing game, Purdy over with a bunch of stuff, maybe McCaffrey over in the passing game, and also Tongas.
Yeah, definitely agree on the Seattle side of that and agree with the Purdy sentiment as well for the over and passing. Seattle's O-line is going to be a little bit healthier than what it was in that first meeting as well. you're also going to see more favorable weather as well for passing. In that game in week 18 that is being referenced so often in this matchup, there was some wind, there was some cold, there was a little bit of rain as well. And so much better conditions here too if you're playing that Purdy passing angle on the other side. But yeah, I agree with you here. Seattle backs going to have a big game. I think you see JSN have a big one as well. So I'm with you on that one. We're seeing it the same way. I like this full game over.
Before we get into the new Sunday games, and I want to bring it up here because of how bad Stroud played, what quarterback concerns you the most that could implode and cost his team a victory?
Good question, because we'll get to Stroud and the absence likely perhaps of Nico Collins, the way that that's trending. But looking at it this week, how do you not point at Sam Darnold? I know we're saying the running backs are going to have a big game, but after what we saw down the stretch last year, I think there's a lot more confidence in Bo Nix. We talked last week about both one seeds potentially being flawed.
Yep.
But is there, like, Stafford's proven who he was. You got last week Caleb Williams with the big comeback. He earns himself some grace. Drake May has looked awesome. Stroud's perhaps without his best offensive weapon, Purdy. You wouldn't put it past the injuries. Josh Allen's doing everything he can without wide receivers. You have these two one seeds, but I think Nick's in a much more comfortable spot. To me, all of the pressure this week is on Sam Darnold to kind of justify his entire career, justify the collapse last season. To me, the easy answer there is Sam Darnold.
Fair enough. Okay, I think we're on the same side here. So, no Collins, Kirk with the career game, but they get two defensive touchdowns and shutting down Pittsburgh. What do you think of Houston catching three at New England?
Yeah, it's a mess without Collins. I don't see what has been a very sporadic offense at a lot of times this season just being able to compete. I mean, Collins is the guy that beats the coverages that New England sits in defensively. Collins is the guy that opens up a guy like Kirk, who opens up the run game, who makes us forget about how many issues this offensive line has had throughout the season. I mean, he has unlocked everything, and you take him out of the picture, and this is going to be very tough. I was impressed with how the Pats defense last week played. They got a few key guys back, but that was a Pats defense that represented the coach that's leading this team, playing to an elevated level against the Chargers team that had some advantages despite their issues at tackle, because the Pats have not been an outside pressure team all season. Mm-hmm. And to hold that Chargers offense to sub 4 yards per play for the majority of the game was very, very impressive. And so I think this is trouble for Houston. I have wanted to find a way the last couple of weeks to get into futures. This was kind of the one matchup that really scared me for how their outlook could be making a run potentially to the Super Bowl behind that really, really good defense. But man, this is trouble without Collins. So this has been bet up to 3 -20. There has been some pro money earlier on the week on New England kind of anticipating that injury. I agree fully with that. I think this is a game where we see May continue his dominance. And to throw it out as well, like, that game finished relatively low scoring last week. There were certainly some opportunities for the Pats to add on a couple more touchdowns in that to make that look a lot more lopsided. So maybe not fully reflective. This to me is still a little bit short here at 3 -20.
Yeah, South Point here in Vegas has been at 3.5 on the game for a little while earlier today. They don't like to use juice on sides. We'll continue here with Adam Chernoff. You can go to the website, adamchernoff.com. Follow him on X at Adam Chernoff. Get his thoughts on Bears Rams also on Sunday coming up. What does he make of Harbaugh to the Giants and some of these other openings? We'll ask him next here on VSiN.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
We continue talking divisional round with longtime friend of the show, Adam Chernoff. Love the analysis, as always, on the National Football League on X at Adam Chernoff. That's also the name of the website you can go check out as well. So the Rams at the Bears to wrap it up for the divisional round on Sunday afternoon / early evening. Rams open up as high as 4.5. I grabbed the Bears at that number. Then They were bet down to 3.5, and now slowly but surely it's moving back up. Four most spots, and I'm looking at DK right now, back to 4.5 with the Rams in this game, Adam. What do you think of the number right now?
Well, let's talk about a few things here. We were talking during the break, if you're looking at teasers, do you tease Seattle down? I said the answer is yes. To me, I would pair it with the Bears being teased up. You had another thought there with potentially Buffalo or Denver, whichever side that one ends up at. So that's an interesting way to look. There's props we can get to. There's a lot to talk about on this game. But just analysis-wise, matchup-wise, handicapping-wise, the big thing all week has been the cold and it's been the wind. The wind is not going to be as impactful, in my opinion, based on weather models I'm looking at, as what it is being discussed to be. And the market always reflects this. Like, we seldom get this wrong. We saw it last week, too, as we talked about the over in Green Bay, Chicago. That thing was getting smashed under. It ends up flying over with a wild fourth quarter. It's just, we're at 48. If the winds were 30-plus miles per hour, like it's being talked about, those games historically have closed the last 10 years with an average total of 39. And so I get it's come down a little bit. I wouldn't be too freaked out about the weather. In terms of cold, slows things down a little bit, but everybody on both sides of these teams is conditioned to playing in cold weather. And so I wouldn't let that be a big deterrent either. As we look at the matchup, the Rams this season at various times have run a ton of 13 personnel. And it's something they've kind of, I don't want to say revolutionized the league with, but it's something that they've done exceptionally well. And it's really fueled their offense to have as much success as they have had at points in the season and led Stafford to what should be an MVP season. To me, they go right back to that this game against this Bears defense that has a key injury at linebacker, but it's a very overrated defense as is. And so that's especially true with some offensive line health coming back to help the Rams. And so this is a game to me where the Rams come out in those looks that we've seen at various times this season that they've had so much success with. This is going to be a big Kyren Williams game, in my opinion, receiving and rushing combo over 73.5. I think he's going to be a major focal point of this offense that's able to move it against Chicago. And then you're going to have the Bears doing what they've done all season. It's scheming up awesome run game plans, which is the weaker portion of the Rams defense. That's Ben Johnson's MO. It's his calling card, if you will. And then as they have all season, they're probably going to be playing a little bit from behind, and you see Caleb Williams do great things when they're chasing. And so I like that Williams look quite a bit. I think this game plays quite differently from how it's being discussed. And I think this is going to be another very exciting Bears game. To me, excitement-wise, of all the games we're going to see this week, this is the one. And so I would not be surprised if we see some of these 48s get taken out and this start to go back the other way. I think it's being misrepresented to how this is going to play and look on Sunday.
You've talked about this for years when you've been on, about curious play calling by McVay. Can you believe how bad they are third, fourth, and one?
No, I don't have an explanation for it, because he's viewed as his great offensive mind, and he gets in those scenarios. I don't understand it. We're going to talk about another coach in a minute who's got similar game state sort of problems that now has a new home in New York. But yeah, McVay, for as much credit as he gets, it's bizarre in those scenarios. Think back earlier in the season in overtime, some of the blunders that he had against San Francisco. I mean, it's just, I don't know what it is. I wish there was an explanation for it. I've never heard a logical case for it. It's just, it's bizarre how some of these great coaches handle some of these scenarios. I'm with you.
So your bets then, San Francisco, Seattle over, that was your biggest one. Patriots -3, -20 cents. And you also, the May attempts for the prop?
Yeah, we missed that. A little rusty here after a regular season and no media. Blew through May over 6.5. Rushing attempts. Houston allows more QB scrambles against than any team in the league because they play so much man coverage outside. You have those DBs and safeties turned. It's just the classic matchup spot. And May scrambles more than any other QB. And so not only do you have Neal's potentially built in here, if you think the Houston defense plays a little bit closer, but just schematically, you have a QB that loves to run and get outside of the pocket, and a defense that has really struggled to pay a lot of attention to that based on how they play. So that sets up pretty well when you're looking at 6.5.
Very good. That and also the Kyren Williams rushing and receiving yards combo prop at 73.5 in the Rams-Bears game. Okay, so then you brought it up. We wanted to talk to you about this as well. What was your reaction to John Harbaugh officially taking the Giants job?
Good hire by the Giants. If you're a Giants fan, you have to be excited. It's the first proven winner, if you will, since Coughlin about a decade ago when that ended. They've had these novice hires in between three guys in a row. It depends how you want to look at Shurmur, not in that same category, but it's a probably a pretty refreshing hire for any Giants fan. He's a culture builder, which the Giants desperately need. I don't know if the comparisons between Dart and Jackson are necessarily fair, but I do think you see a defense that's been super passive that now is an awesome D-line reflect kind of the culture and the style that Baltimore has played with similar makeup for a defense over the last decade. And so I think that's a positive for Giants fans too. So good hire, obviously. It's going to be very important on who we see as coordinators here, though, just because Harbaugh is that kind of hands off. But to the point I made last segment, we're talking about great coaches that are held in high regard that have weird game state blunders. The worry here is if those great coordinators are not hired, I mean, how many fourth quarter leads have we seen Harbaugh's Ravens blow? How many weird choices late have we seen? And so maybe that changes with the right coordinators, but that's kind of a concern here as you look to the Giants needing that leadership category.
What do you think happens in Pittsburgh with Tomlin out?
Yeah, this is, I thought it was a joke when I read it, but it's true. The Steelers have had three head coaches since 1969. Yeah. Did you guys know that?
Yeah.
Three head coaches since 1969. I read this and I knew it's a great franchise and I mean, comfortable, but that's insane. Because as a Jets fan, we've had more coaches in the last six seasons than that. And so that to me was crazy. If you believe that Rooney is going to go with his type, it's going to be a defensive-minded coach who's a DC, becoming a first-time head coach that's pretty young. And so that's the family's last three hires in the last 50 years. And so you think about a lot of defensive-minded candidates are on the table this year. Shula, Minter, Halfley, all of those guys really fit the bill. There was an interesting move on Kalshi in favor of Shula, as we saw some of those percentages kick up recently. And so perhaps that's the way that Pittsburgh is going to be leaning. But if you buy into that being the case, to be one of those defensive guys. But great ownership, great storied franchise. It's going to be massive shoes to fill behind Tomlin for any of these younger guys that likely comes through and takes that job. Key thing here, what do they do with the QB position? Mm-hmm. That's going to truly decide everything in this division for him.
All right, pal. Love talking to you. Thanks so much for the time. Best of luck this weekend. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Enjoy the divisional round. We'll chat again soon.
There you go. Chernoff. You can follow him on X at Adam Chernoff. Joined us here on the Progressive Guest Line.
Now, the more you think about it, you really make a case that because their numbers are all so low that all these guys can go over in the Bears game. Well, you see where Burden's at, where you see where Adunze's priced and Parkinson. And I mean,
Parkinson's 19.5 again.
Yeah. Adunze, 25 yards each half is 5-1.
And so if the wind's not going to be a factor,
it's going to be throw, I think, too. And well, you can get on the ground with Swift, too. But where's the Puka? Puka, 25 yards each half, $1.40. 5 yards each quarter plus 145. Stafford, 100 yards both halves, $1.40. I mean, how many carries will Williams get? He'll get some. But you know how McVay is, too. I could see a lot of these go. And we mentioned the Loveland and Puka, 5 yards each quarter, 9-1, which you mentioned earlier in the week.
Grade the nickname here. Superfly Puka Nacua.
There's a resemblance. I didn't see that till now.
No, just because it rhymes.
Well, I was looking at with the hair and how he actually looks like him.
Yeah, a little bit. Actually considered it. I just did because the name rhymes.
Yeah, he's going off the top rope, getting ready for big game 60 with a big deal to match.
Look at off the top
pull
rope.
I'm going to pull that up during the break. There's a resemblance there now that you think about it. VSiN Pro annual subscriber, bet smarter all year long with full access, every best bet, every host, every guest, the DraftKings and Circa betting splits. the AI-powered prop tools, the betting guides, the Super Bowl, the madness, all the picks Monday in the title game, VSiN.com/subscribe. Code FTM. Save your money now. Code FTM. Save $60 today.
That's called teamwork right there. We're going to make that stick. Benjamin Albright covers the Broncos for their flagship station in Denver, KOA Colorado. Get his thoughts on the game coming up next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Early game tomorrow is a doozy. Most of the games are this weekend. Divisional round, you can't go wrong. We get the Bills playing at the Broncos. And welcome back. It's Follow the Money here on VSiN, the sports betting network. And to talk about this game, we go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Benjamin Albright has covered the league and the Broncos for a long time. He's with KOA Colorado in Denver. Benjamin, thanks for the time today. How are you?
Doing great, fellas. How are you?
Doing really well.
Good, sir.
What did you make of the flip of favorites here? The Bills opened up a 1.5-point road favorite at most sports books, and now Denver's sitting there as the small favorite here.
Well, it's fascinating to me because if you'd asked me that, middle of last week, I would have said it would open the other way and gone the other way. So it's fascinating to me that it's flipped to Broncos being the favorite. I think part of that is he's looking at Buffalo and that receiving core right now, which is down to what, 3 healthy bodies and a practice squad guy or two. And so I think people are banking on the one dimensional from Buffalo. However, that's going to force Buffalo in a lot of 12 personnel, which, plays well against what you need to do to beat Denver.
It seems there's a lot of negativity, at least by some columnists there, about the season they've had. That you were on this great streak where you've won 13 of 14, but saying this isn't sustainable. There's no way they're going to the Super Bowl. How about the disrespect locally and also nationally of this team that keeps winning, even though it's been ugly?
Yeah, I think it cuts both ways. I mean, on the one hand, those columns are accurate. I mean, we've gotten this far. We're the number one seed. We're still looking around wondering if this football team's any good. And then, on the flip side of that, they found a way to be resilient. They found a way to come back in the fourth quarter, even when they dug themselves into holes. So there's got to be something said for that. I appreciate both sides of the argument. I'm hoping that debate will get settled on the field.
So your comment about the Bills going heavy 12 personnel in this matchup then and how that could benefit them throughout the game, individually then speaking, which player or players do you think would benefit the most from that?
On the Bills' offensive side, you're probably talking about the tight ends there, Knox and what's his face there, whose
Kincaid.
Name always escapes me. Yeah, Kincaid. There you go. Gosh, I don't know why I always mess on that. Knox and Kincaid, I think those guys, and to be honest with you, tight end's been an Achilles heel against Vance Joseph defense for years. Mm-hmm. So that's something. Now, that said, I do expect a little bit of a coverage change here. What you'll see is regular coverage on first and second down. You get into those third downs, and you probably see Sertan go cover one of the tight ends, as well as Jahdae Barron. They'll go to more of a dime look and have those guys covering that. And that's been something they've done at times. When the Raiders trotted out, Bowers and Mayer, that's what they did. They put Sertan on Bowers, and that has kind of been their tight end killer on third down. So that look for those kind of coverage shifts from the Broncos if they go to those situations.
How's the relationship there with Moss and the fans? Is it bad luck? Is it just wrong place? Wrong? How does this guy continue to get all these PI calls? Is he being picked on by officials? How do you see it?
I think it's a little bit of both. There's been some things that have definitely been his fault, and then there's some, and I hope I don't get too much trouble for saying this, him playing cornerball while being white. At the end of the day, it's just one of those things where you're looking at this, and you're like, how do you make that call, man? There's been a few of them that you're just looking at like, wow. And then there's some scenarios where, they've had a couple of touchdowns scored on him, 2 or 3 touchdowns that have just been incredibly well defended, and an even better catch. You can go back to the Treylon Burks catch with Washington and look at Moss could have defended that any better, and Burks went up and made an insane Odell Beckham-style catch. So I think the fans are a little more forgiving about Riley Moss than maybe some of the pundits.
We're talking Broncos-Bills here. Follow the Money on VSiN, the sports betting network. Our guest, Benjamin Albright, covers the Broncos for KOA Colorado. He's on the Progressive Guest Line. We saw it unfolding a little bit last week until the Jags got away from it, and that was with Tootin, Etienne. You can run the ball all day on Buffalo, and that was a mistake by Liam Cohen. I don't think you can tell us. Peyton's probably going to stick with it, right? Assuming that it's going to work because the key metrics here in Buffalo, they're a disaster on the run defense. How do you see that unfolding overall? And then the combination there of RJ Harvey and Jaleel McLaughlin.
Well, I think that's the first thing. You look at Buffalo, and it is obvious. They're number one against the pass, but 28th against the run. And that's, you know, that's one of those things right away you should say, okay, this is what we should do. But then you go back and look at Sean Payton over the course of the year, and that's just not the case. He abandons the run with regularity. Mm-hmm. It's maddening. It's been something I've tweeted about or talked about regularly for the entirety of the season, and that is they just, you know, with J.K. Dobbins out, they just don't have anybody that I guess he has the faith in, and he just gets away from it. Bo Nix wound up leading the league in passing attempts, which is absurd with the offense that we have. That should not be happening. And so, you know, you look at this thing and the faith, I think, in Sean Payton to stick with the more boring aspect of football instead of dialing up, you know, throwing it all over the yard like he wants to do. I think that faith is not there from the Broncos faithful. That said, you got a 1-2 punch with R.J. Harvey and Jaleel McLaughlin. Tyler Bidet will be kind of the third down back in terms of blocking. Not going to get much on the stat sheet as far as that kind of stuff goes, maybe a catch or two. But, you know, there's been some grumbling because R.J. Harvey is a guy who just turned to a running back position three 4 years ago. He was a quarterback even into college versus Jaleel McLaughlin, who's the NCAA's all-time leading rusher. You watch these two run the football, and Jaleel is clearly the superior runner. He's got better instincts, better vision, better patience. But R.J. catches the ball better out of the backfield. Of course, he's got the gaudy touchdown numbers. You're kind of hoping in this game, if you're a Broncos fan, that Jaleel's going to get the ball on the ground a little bit more on early down type stuff, because otherwise, watching RJ run the football, it's, you know, 2 yards a carry, it's just not working.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And to me, the numbers are so bettable for Jaleel. It's like 20 or 21 and a half for the rushing yards, and he is higher than 5-1 to score a touchdown. And the Bills gave up 18 rushing touchdowns to running backs throughout the year. I just, those to me pop off the page.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely hammer the yardage over there for McLaughlin. As far as the anytime, yeah, sprinkle that one. I'm not saying bet the mortgage or anything, but yeah. Certainly sprinkle that anytime. Also, another sleeper, if you're looking for an anytime, Nate Atkins, if he winds up being active, they love him in that low red zone as a guy to, you know, to kind of get the ball to on some of those choice routes in place of the fullback.
Noted. Writing that down as we speak. Shall look at that during the break. Also, another guy I wanted to ask about the Broncos in the passing game. Something I've talked about now for the last couple of days, Franklin's props. And I get it. I know how the snap share has gone down the stretch where Pat Bryant kind of overtook him when it comes to routes run, targets, et cetera. But Franklin is 14-3 over 2.5 catches on the year. And he's 2.5. And the plus money is as high as plus 145 for him to get 3 catches. To me, that's worth a stab. But what say you?
I kind of like that simply because I think the Broncos are going to be playing from behind at some point, and they will throw, and that's a guy Bo likes dating back to college. Now Troy drops the ball a little bit, and that's sort of a problem. But the other part of this to take into consideration, Bryant's coming back off the concussion. He's going to be worked back in. You know, you've got a little Jordan Humphrey who vultures a catch or two here or there, and then they're going to activate Elijah Moore for this game, the former Bill, who hasn't been active all year. So everybody's kind of got a question mark on if he's going to be active on game day, what his role, you know, exactly going to be since they're calling him up, him and Caleb Lohner up. So that's really kind of the question mark if that's going to eat into Troy Franklin's productivity.
You don't think the Bills are going to be able to run the ball much, even though James Cook led the league in rushing yards this year, do you?
I kind of do. I mean, they blew the Broncos off the ball last year. Yeah. They're much bigger on the offensive line. I mean, they got a 347-pound guard, 330-pound tackle. The way to beat the Broncos is to run at them and keep yourself two-dimensional. You know, you look at the defensive line. For all the things the Broncos are great at in rushing the passer, they're not exactly the greatest at stopping the run. They just haven't had a lot of people do it because they've been, you know, they've been in situations where they haven't had to. You look at the heft there. I mean, you've got a nose tackle that's, what, 285, 295, and Malcolm Roach. DJ Jones is probably the heaviest offensive lineman, about three, our defensive lineman, about 305. John Franklin Myers, about 285. Zach Allen, about 290. They just don't have any 300-pounders on the defensive line. And if you're going 12 personnel on top of that, you can blow them off the ball a little bit. And I suspect that's what Buffalo's going to try and do.
Okay, very good. At the end of the day, who do you think comes out on top and wins the game?
Man, it's tough. I want to go with Denver. I'd like to continue cover winning some football here, but you know, Buffalo's got the experience. They've got Josh Allen, and I just don't trust Sean Payton to stick with the run long enough in this one. I could look like an idiot in the end, but I'm going to take Buffalo 23-20.
All right. And they're going to be playing which team then in the AFC title game?
I think it'll be Houston. I just think that team has got a destiny on them. That defense, the most disrespectful defense in football. They don't blitz. They don't disguise it. They just line up in cover three, send the front four, dare you to beat them, and nobody does it.
Very good, Ben. Dynamite info. Thanks so much for the time today. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
There you go. Ben Albright, KOA Colorado, on the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on X at AlbrightNFL.
Well, it's not often a guest comes on and gives out a 20-to-1 shot. That's what Adkins is. Anytime.
Anytime.
Wow.
Well, and super strong on McLaughlin as well on top of it.
Yeah, and he's so low.
I like him coming in as well.
Rushing. He's big on Harvey receiving.
Right.
Not rushing. Atkins is, I wonder if Kramer's going to have this. He's 90-to-1 first touchdown of the game. What a call that could be. 20-to-1 anytime. That's a bomber.
I'm fairly confident I can guess at least one or two of his long shots he's going to have for the first touchdown scores. You want to write it down right now? Yeah. I think I'll have a side bet with you here. I'll buy you a Coke. You like to drink Coke so much, it's insane. I think that he's going to have Farrell from the 49ers first touchdown score.
Okay.
He loves the backup tight ends.
Boy, that is not a ringing endorsement of Peyton.
No, I mean, it was not.
He knows the team. And I mean, wow.
But he's right, though, isn't he?
He will abandon the run. And are we going to see this 2 weeks in a row? Let him off the hook? Just run the ball against him. Come on.
And then the Bills are going to be the ultimate team of destiny. We're going to be, again, at the end of this weekend and the next weekend. Yeah. It all worked out, man. No Mahomes, no Jackson, no Burrow. Look at this.
Come on. He's got the bye all this time to look at tape and study how bad they are against the run and what Jacksonville did going right down the field. He's not going to establish the run and keep pounding them.
The VSiN website has a bunch of handy-dandy tools at your disposal to help out your daily, weekly handicap. Wait until you hear some of the players in action this weekend and how they performed against expectations throughout the year. How much juice are you willing to lay? That's coming up next.